listening to Around Comics.
Episode 427, Trade Talks, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's New X-Men, Volume 1 is the book we're talking about today, gentlemen. I'm Brian Salazar. With me is Christopher Niesman and Thomas Caters. How are you, fellas?
Good. Hey, don't you shortchange Lanil Francis Yu and Ethan Van Sciver?
They each got an issue, but Quitely...
is why we're reading this.
Quite frankly, is the reason I'm. Yeah.
He's big part of why we're talking about this book. What is it? 10 year? Tom? Oh, is Tom back? There he is. There's Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, this is your trade talk.
This is our trade talk.
It is. Is this really almost? Is this 20 years old?
Yeah.
Wow.
Older 20 years old.
X-Men Run is 20 years old. I feel terrible now. I'm gonna have to go take a nap.
Why? You feel?
I feel old.
You feel old?
Well, you are. You are old.
You are old. I will say, the book has aged really well.
Better than you. Right?
Much better than any of us.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years.
Hey, Sal's in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, Sal's great. Yeah, that was self-deprecating.
I'm probably literally better in every way than I was 20
years ago. Than you were 20 years ago.
Now give me another 5 years. It's all downhill.
It's diminishing returns.
You are the new X-Men. It's just better with age. It's aged like a fine wine.
Yeah, he's if there's going to be someone who's going to wear like black leather, it's Sal.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
The rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom and I are more the spandex crowd.
Yeah. So what year did this come out?
2001.
Holy shit.
This is issue 116, and it has they used to put the dates down there. I kind of like the trade dress on this.
Why do you have that
2001?
All?
This issue cost $2.25.
Yeah, I think it started like May 2001. I looked up because I was like, "What year did this come out?" I was
something
like,
with that.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to think. Quietly had worked on The Authority with Miller before this, right?
Sure.
Maybe.
Let's look up Frank Quitely. He left The Authority to draw this book.
Yeah, because he had kind of turned into kind of an it guy. And I'm not for. Is this the first time that he and Morrison teamed up? It feels like it.
No, he did Flex Mentallo.
Oh, the Doom Patrol stuff.
And I think he had worked with him in Britain on some stuff before that as well. Okay. So
that's right.
Flex Mentallo.
Yeah. So Tom, why did you pick this book?
I hadn't read it in a little while, and I saw it on the shelf, and go for a summer blockbuster in these summer months. You know, like a big.
Fun
crowd pleaser, big fun crowd pleaser book that I enjoy. I haven't read in a while, and I was happy I picked it. I'm gonna keep reading it like Transmetropolitan. I'll be like, oh yeah, that's right, I really like this,
it's really good. That's right, I forgot.
I forgot how good this was. At the same time, it's kind of disturbing how prescient it is 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even as you get farther than the first trade, and you're like, oh, God, like, oh, yeah,
still
no.
dealing with the like, same shit 20 years
yeah,
later.
Yeah, like,
even worse, though.
Racism is immortal.
Right?
Exactly, yeah. And, like, but, yeah, I was telling you guys right before we came on, I actually, you know, I went online because I was like, it's sometimes hard to remember when a book comes out that's so drastically different. Like, you felt it in 2001 when you read it and you were like, oh, but over time you kind of forget what things were like or like what was happening in X-Men, you know, like why was this such like a, like, you know, it's like the same thing when Morrison did the JLA and you go back and you read what was happening in the Justice League and you're like, oh my God, like what was happening in the Justice League? Yeah. So I went back, you know, I did a little internet sleuthing to read some old X-Men issues of like the stuff that happened right before this. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, it was like Scott Lobdell, you know, like they were fine. They were fine books, you know, of, but they were so like dusty would be the way.
That, like, I think they were still recovering from the Chuck Austin years.
It's just like, there's so many words on the page. It's so Claremontian. You know, and sort of
Claremontian.
Like, you know, like,
don't you fucking disparage like, Claremont, my friend.
Claremont is obviously a genius who had more to do with the success of the X-Men, you know, like obviously huge. Yeah. But, you know, like it he has a certain style of storytelling.
He spared no words getting there, Tom.
Yeah, and this wasn't Claremont. This was other people still within the like that realm of like how you tell like an X-Men story. And I was just like, oh my God, yeah, now I remember like when this came out, what it was like from what Frank Quitely's art looked like to how the storytelling like was just like, oh my God, yeah, now I remember. Like this was
people freaked the fuck out.
Drastically different and just like how it looked and like how it read from X-Men comics, you know, like this wasn't what X-Men comics looked like X-Men comics were like the soap opera was turned all the way up to 1,000. Right. Yeah. And like the way characters were designed was sort of like, still very beholden to like 90s, sort of like in that still in that 90s hangover of like what a mutant design looks like and like
the cartoon, all, the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. All mutants fly and their weapons are, you know, all their powers are essentially like laser blasts and like just it was all of a sudden my brain went back to 2001. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, when I read this, I was like, oh.
When I was reading it, one of the things that struck me as interesting was the idea that there's a, and it's not a big part, but there is a small part in it where they kind of, in a clumsy way, sort of like explain why they're all wearing different, like, leather costumes.
Yeah.
And it's like, why did you ever have us dress up like superheroes in the first place? And when I read it this time, I'm like, that's kind of an odd thing. But then thinking back, like, yeah, oh yeah, they were wearing spandex, you know, at this point exclusively. Like there was never, you never saw a superhero really wear anything other than spandex and capes and that kind of a thing. And nowadays, I don't think it's nearly as strange to think of a superhero in like a leather pants and a jacket and more
and a lot
action.
Of this book, I think.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting. That struck me as like, oh yeah, they had to kind of let people know why. They had to kind of like let the fans know why. You know,
I remember
Cyclops
this
wearing this like weird blue and yellow bondage outfit. You know, like why is he just like, you know, like it was like, oh my God, I remember this was like, whoa, what, like they look like this, and like there's only 5 of them. And like, just like everything was just like everything that had been, you know, and it's a classic case with any of these classic superhero characters, right? Like, you have your boom and bust years, right? You have, like, someone comes in, like, revitalizes it, and then it becomes successful and it expands and expands so much that it becomes kind of like, oh God, like, there's too much. Like, not everything is as interesting as the thing that spawned it, right? And it's bloated and kind of like, oh, what is even going on? Like, why are mutants, you know, like the way Morrison and Quietly refocused what like mutants were, mm-hmm. in a way of like resetting that in like a, oh my God, okay, yeah. Like, this is like, there's real tension, right? As opposed to sort of like, where the X books had sometimes get at points where like the mutant thing just kind of, yeah, it's there. It's almost like, yeah, I mean, people are afraid of mutants, but like, you don't feel that in the stories all the time. Like, it's just like a subtext to the stories. So, you know, like making the decision to like in the second issue or third one, I forget which one, kill 16 million mutants, just like, yeah. Okay, like we're going to just reset like what's happening and like reset the tension of like the reality of mutants on Earth. And it's like remembering all that stuff again of like, oh yeah, that was like crazy reading that back then, or like making the Sentinels not look like the big 60s robots and like just like all that stuff.
I still miss those.
Yeah, or it's like, oh my God, yeah, like that.
Well, I think the overwhelming theme, and putting myself back in 2001 when it came out, mm-hmm. is we're going to make the X-Men weird, and we're going to have fun doing it. I mean, it became a almost weird for weird's sake. I mean, you get thrown in right in the first issue with Ugly John or what's his name?
Yeah, with three faces. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, we're going to do a bunch of weird mutants that have really no useful powers.
The first time we've seen that in the X-Men books. I mean, you had the Morlocks, and that kind of a thing. I don't know that it was necessarily so weird. I think it was certainly new in the sense of, you know, a different spin on the X-Men to some degree, or at least. I don't know. It's an interesting, to me, it's a really interesting book because it is two things. And I think, you know, like, I think Morrison did this really well with obviously All-Star Superman as well. The idea of, you know, kind of retconning a classic hero, but in some ways, like distilling them down to their beginnings and their origins even more. You know what I mean? Like, Wolverine's. Yeah. Still Wolverine, maybe more Wolverine than he had been in years.
Yeah.
And Cyclops is more
has
Cyclops.
An actual character.
Yeah.
An actual character. Like, that's the other thing that he does so well in this is like actually give each one of the X-Men like a real character besides personality, right? Besides defining them by their relationship to another person, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. they have their own motivations and like, you know, like I was trying to remember the other times that Cyclops actually was a character, right? Where you were like, oh, like I kind of get what this guy is about. And like seeing, you know, and Morrison did, you know, such a great job of that in the writing and artistically, you know, all the artists did a great job of like bringing Jean Grey was a real character, right? And Emma Frost was a real character, and even Professor X, you know, like instead of just these characters sort of like playing like Professor X is the savior of mutants and he protects the kids and Scott is the leader who's in love with Jean, right? And like just playing those roles, like kind of like giving them discernible personalities. Even Wolverine, like you were saying, like Wolverine has a personality, he's not just like a caricature.
Right.
Of like what Wolverine is, you know?
Yeah. Like, you know, Cyclops is actually, you know, he's distant and cold, but there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like they touch on, you know, why he's like this, why he's calculating and cold and sort of, you know, impersonal and he's actually slim for the first time in forever, you know?
Yeah.
And Jean is a real human being, not just sort of the Phoenix or Marvel Girl, the cute girl. You know what I mean? Like, she's an actual human being with like emotions and thoughts and that kind of thing. And Beast, even, you know, you know, a lot of his, the time spent with him is him kind of dealing with the fact that he's going through a second, you know, mutation, and, you know, how that affects his love life and different things. And yeah, it was interesting for sure. And it definitely, you know, it's funny, like that was new, because the X-Men became, like you said, sort of this copy. Everyone was trying to copy Claremont. And so the copy just got weaker and weaker, and it just became like a pastiche.
Uninteresting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that's why I think of late 90s X-Men is very uninteresting.
I mean, it's interesting you bring up the Morlocks too, because I think it is like a thing that gets reintroduced in the X-Men is like, what if you're a mutant whose power isn't useful?
Right.
Like, you know, like, well,
there's 8 million of them. There's got to be some losers. Yeah. There's got to, you know.
Yeah, there's 16 million on Genosha. Like, they can't all shoot laser beams and fly, you know, like. Or, you know, like the way they introduce, and I can't remember if this is, I read a little past the first trade too, when they introduce Angel, the new Angel, the girl who's got like the fly powers, you know, like making her definitely, you know, like the X-Men always have like a Kitty Pryde or a Jubilee or like some young character that you can be like, this is the character through which we meet the other characters and they're the connection to us. But it's like, what if we make that person really not into doing any of this and make them like, you know, like in a way, like really teenagerish.
Like a kid forced to play sports that doesn't want.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to be a mutant. I don't want to hang out with you. Like, this is not what I want to do. Like,
come on, kid, jump in our jet airplane and go fight robots.
Yeah, exactly. You're now a superhero. It's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not into that. Like, this is not a good.
The last issue in this, you know, starts off with, I can't think of the character's name, the beak faced.
Beak.
It is Beak. Yeah, it's like he's not really very good at being an X-Man, you know, and they're trying to like level him up, you know, but it's like, yeah, this guy's gonna die. This guy's terrible.
It's like, and it's like, yeah, and just resetting that of like being not every mutant is Cyclops, right? You know, or like where, you know, like he's super powerful and like can handle himself and like looks good and can essentially fit in like wherever he wants to go, right? Like the sort of like in a way, you know, Morrison, you know, did such a good job of also just like resetting like that fundamental part of the X-Men about like the being an outsider. Like, what does it mean to like not be able to fit in, like when you're somebody who's this group that people are afraid of, and some of you can walk outside the door and just not use your power, and that's okay, you're gonna pass. But so Beak can't, like, that's what he is, you know, right? And like the X-Men always had sort of like these ways around it, like image projectors and like, you know, there's like storytelling ways to get around that.
Make everyone see you as a human, you know.
Where it's like kind of like not having that and be like, actually no, like some of you, you know. And as the series goes on, that obviously becomes more and more part of it, is some of the students, the ones who can't just fit in wherever they go, you know, they get brought together by, spoilers, Magneto.
What?
You know, like, manipulates them into, you know, Magneto was right, you know, that's what the shirts that people are buying in the book, you know, he sort of bands together the mutants who can't fit. Right. Like, they're the ones who can't like pass as normal if they chose to, you know.
Wait, you mean that happens, that you'll find a group of disaffected people and they're more apt to follow like an autocratic voice?
Sort of.
It's an inherent problem with the idea of equality is that
yeah.
you can never break it down where there's not inequality. You know what I mean? In you know, if you try and you know, like racism, you know, we're trying to, all races are the same. Everyone is the same. But then within a race, there's inequality. You know, if you're light skinned, you know, black, if you're sort of, there's never, you're always going to find a group within a group within a group within a group mm-hmm. that is not going to have the same equality as the rest of the group. It's just,
I think all races are equal except for the Dutch, because fuck
them. And then the U men, right? Then the U men thing that
Morrison
introduces of like the idea of like people that think it's unfair that mutants get to have be mutants and that they should not, you know, like, which is just like a wild idea. Yeah, just like a wild idea, you know, like, I mean, so that's.
But it's really funny, you know, you were saying it's prescient. It's like, I mean, look what we're dealing, you know, look what's going on today with like transgenderism and the idea, right. You know, and it's like trying to be accepted for a decision that you make in your life to, you know, I don't know if I'm saying it the right way, but you know what I mean? Like, not to equate transgenders to people that modify their bodies bionically, but I mean, there is some sort of parallel there to some degree in the idea,
an interesting angle on identity and choosing your identity, and like, you know, Morrison obviously is those are themes that come up a lot in his work, is like the idea of like choosing who you are and like what you identify, you know, and sometimes it's heroes and sometimes it's villains and sometimes like the tension of that, you know, like to me it's like a really remarkable run. Because it is like, it is kind of classic X-Men, right? Like he goes back to the stuff that makes the X-Men interesting, right? And he pulls little pieces, you know, he eventually pulls Phoenix in and he pulls these things and he like takes little pieces from the history, but he also like makes it feel, he introduces new angles on these themes and new things to like think about in regards to the X-Men, and makes it very entertaining. Like, just aside from all that stuff, like they're just really fun comic books. Like,
why can't Grant Morrison write everything like this? Like, I love this Grant Morrison. I love when he does this, but then there's the Grant Morrison who does other stuff that is just like, you know, the invisible, God almighty.
It comes back around. But it's like, yeah, like it's like All-Star Superman or stuff like that, where it's like, oh my God, like this is just wildly entertaining X-books with just stuff like now the Sentinels are wild and they can look like whatever they want to look like. And now they killed all the mutants on Genosha, you know, like, by the way, you know, it's funny because the story preceding this was all about Magneto becoming the ruler of Genosha and wanting to like start a war. And it's funny to think that like in two issues, Morrison was like, we'll just kill all of them. And that's like,
it is so nonchalant too. Like
it happened. It's just like two pages.
Yeah. And, and 16 million people are dead. And there's barely any kind of like, you know, memoriam for it. There's no, like, I mean, you have a little bit in the next issue, but it's pretty quickly glossed over that all.
Like, all right, I got a story to tell. Get out of my way.
Even the fact that
it comes up again later and later, but I mean, in hindsight, I get it, because I think it's the idea of like no one could stop it. Like there was not going to be some like X-Men crossover where all the X-Men come together and save all 60. Like, it wasn't going to happen. Like someone did this awful thing and it happened. And like, there's no escaping.
If I have any complaint is that it was, and part of it is because, you know, the way they collect this series and these four issues, essentially kind of, it feels like it ends really quickly. And the whole death of all these people are shuffled under the rug really fast. obviously, as you read the rest of the series, that's not the case. But when you just read this one volume, it's like,
you're like, oh, wow. That... that's but it does come up many times later about the repercussions of like, oh, my God, like this thing happened. Right. And like, what does that mean? You know, like 16 million mutants were murdered and like no one could do anything to stop it. And like some people don't care that it happened or don't believe that it happened. And like the idea of, you know, the Magneto is right thing where it's sort of like the reframing of Magneto is perhaps not, you know, it's always interesting, right? Because it's the more interesting X-Men stories are always the one where it's like, I don't know if Xavier's right.
Right.
Like, you know, like he might be wrong too, you know, like he, maybe he isn't right to tell everyone he's a mutant and put all the students in his school in danger. I'm sure he thinks he's doing the right thing, but he might be wrong. Magneto might be wrong. Like none of these two dudes, guess what? These two old dudes might both be wrong and are like leading all these young people.
Let's be honest. Has anyone that has led a lot of people anywhere for the most part been right more than they've been wrong?
No.
Is any wrong. Leader, you know, like, I don't know.
Mostly wrong. Mostly wrong.
But... Is it Xavier who admits or who comes out as a mutant, or was he possessed by Cassandra Nova when he did that?
Oh, at that point I have to go back and read it. It might be possible. I think it was
Cassandra Nova that kind of forced him to do that to put things in motion.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like, it is this idea of Magneto is wrong and Xavier is right. And like, I always like it when someone can put a twist on it of like, actually, you know, like Magneto is right to be scared of what will happen to mutants. And like, here's the proof of why he should be scared.
There's 16 million reasons why.
Yeah, like,
I mean, other than really early X-Men stuff where it was this sort of good versus evil, very black and white binary.
It is mostly.
But I think, you know, beyond that, even, you know, Claremont, it was more that question of like, are these guys right? Who's more right than the other? Who's more wrong than the other? Are they both wrong?
I think the difference though is when Claremont did it, it was always in the context of now Magneto's a good guy. There's always like that tension of like, actually now Magneto, you know, like when he was in charge of the New Mutants and Doug Ramsey dies and like these sort of things of like, it was always, and it was really good storytelling. When I was, you know, I loved the idea of Magneto being in charge of the X-Men because it was such like a classic comic book thing of like, now your greatest villain is the person in charge, right? And it was always, I was always like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. right? Because it's like, it's a great twist. It's a great
Why is this suit purple right? now? I don't understand.
I never liked the purple suit. Never liked the purple suit. But like,
was that John Romita Jr.? The design that
might be
that was DRZR. Yeah, it was about that era.
But the thing I do find interesting about this is like you're sort of like Magneto is right, and also Magneto is definitely a villain, and like the internal tension, at least when I've keep reading it, of like, okay, like Magneto is not going to turn into a good guy at the end of this story and like lead the X-Men, right? Like it was like a slightly different go at that. I also recommend anyone go back and read the issue before the first new X-Men issue and you'll have like a brain meltdown of like, they feel like they came out like 40 years apart. Like it's just like from the way like the lettering is done.
Oh yeah.
To like, everything. It's just, it's wild.
Yeah. People freaked, man. It was a polarizing book. People loved it or hated it, I felt.
I think the other thing with Magneto too is, you know, the the difference between him and Xavier is, you know, is sort of, they both have valid perspectives, whether one's right or the wrong, but it's sort of like how they go about, you know, it's a very classic sort of liberal conservative kind of argument between the two of them. You know what I mean? Like Xavier's thing is, we're going to help people, and they're going to understand we're the good guys. And you know, Magneto's
that's
always,
why he had him wear spandex.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like make them look like superheroes. Yeah, that's something people trust, you know, like as opposed to.
But I think Magneto is more, you know, sort of like, no, we have to force them. There's no way to, you know, come to some sort of agreement. We just have to use our force to.
Magneto believes, and rightfully so in some cases, that, you know, the war has already been declared. They're not trying to avert a war. The war is already happening, and Charles is working towards peace, and Magneto's like, no, we're at war.
Awesome. Hippies versus the, you know,
hard hats.
Tom, which side are you on? The hippies?
Only way to look through history is to divide everyone into two caricatures.
Hippies or hard hats.
The only way is to think about history is through those two lenses.
That's all that matters.
To go into the less heavy portions of it, I also enjoyed. I could stand to read more Morrison writing Cyclops and Wolverine together.
Like, just the first page. The first page where Cyclops is blowing a hole. And he's like, I think you can stop that, Wolverine. Wolverine's just up there digging away at this thing's back.
Yeah. And like, he did such a good job of like taking those two characters who I think had, like we said, fallen into the trap of like, this is what their relationship is. Yeah. And so everyone's copying that dynamic and now putting like a different twist on it or a different way of like, how do they relate to each other? Right. And like kind of seeing like a different way of, you know, where Wolverine almost sort of like gets Cyclops a little bit more now because of what Cyclops had been through with some stuff. I can't even remember. I think he died and came back and had something to do with it. It was some, you know, X-Men stuff, right. Where it's like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, like Wolverine kind of gets him a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And like, you can kind of see more connection between the two of them and how they relate to each other, which was like a nice little subtle thing. But like, I always appreciated that. It's like, oh, that's like a little different. Like, I've never felt these two characters relate that way, you know, to each other.
Yeah, it was always the love triangle, right? Like, that was sort of, and everybody just kind of played off of that. It was just that was what those characters were to some degree. And this is like, no, that's, and he even, you know, in the last issue, it's like he has that moment between Jean and Wolverine, and you know, where she's, you know, Wolverine could easily at that point take advantage of Jean in this, you know, vulnerable moment, and Jean wants him to, but he doesn't. And he kind of puts an end to it. And I think that's Morrison sort of like going, no, this is over. This love triangle is over. Let's stop telling that story.
Because as he says, it's never, we both know it would never work, you know?
Right. We know it. We know it won't work.
So, my biggest problem with that page, when did Wolverine get to be taller than Jean? Am I right?
I didn't notice, but
tall Wolverine.
When Hugh Jackman started playing him,
It's tall Wolverine.
Tall Wolverine. Yeah, where it's like, we're now going to bury this. Like, this story is not going to be a Jean, Scott, and Wolverine story. You know, like, it's going to be a different thing. Yeah. Sure, there's going to be soap opera, but it's not going
to
be this one.
Emma Frost.
Yeah, like, it's going to be different soap opera than the one. Yeah, it's always like, oh, okay, because it's like, you're like, oh god, it's going to be one of these stories, and he immediately is like, nope, like, it's not going to be that. It's not the story you're expecting to have happen.
Yeah, and we talk about the fashion changes, but this outfit of Emma Frost is fucking ridiculous. And but quietly, what is it about him that he can draw people that are super thin but frumpy at the same time.
Well, he does he doesn't do like muscle-y.
Like everything yeah.
looks kind fat of on everyone.
Everything looks kind of squishy.
Yeah, everybody's got a layer of fat on them. I mean, they're more like like Wolverine's like a longshoreman. You know, he's not built like a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
You know, he's built, you know, like probably he would be. I mean, guy, if you look at fighters, you know, unless they're cutting weight, they're not like fucking
ripped,
you know, like that, you know, and he, you know, even the women he draws, they're not just like muscle bound, you know, ripped, no body fat. It's like, no, he puts body fat on him. He puts actual, you know, like most people would be, even if you're in shape, like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, you guys, you know, it's like you look at a movie where, you know, Hugh Jackman playing as Wolverine. Well, you know how hard he worked and how much he starved himself for that one scene where he's shirtless, you know, it's like,
and right after they said cut, he went and ate a cheeseburger.
And yeah. And drank like 12 gallons of water. Cause he hadn't probably been drinking for fucking 3 days, you know?
Yeah.
But it's an interesting way that he has the ability to draw. I love his villains. Mm-hmm. I love the way, and with Morrison and Miller too, like Authority, he did this too, where like his villains don't necessarily look powerful, but they certainly look evil. And they just look like there's something inside them that's kind of wrong, rotting or something, you know, like they just look evil. And the way Morrison, you know, even the way, you know, like Cassandra, how he builds her up as this just despicable fucking person that's just truly evil, like a different evil than Magneto. Magneto is like a sympathetic evil, like most Marvel villains have some sort of like empathy you can reach out to, but not Morrison's villains. They're just fucking evil. They're just, you know, and
like her whole purpose is just evil. She's like
extinction.
That's it. Yeah, like
genocide.
There is no redeeming quality. Like from birth, from inside the womb, Xavier, you know, had been fighting her. You know, like it's the menace of like creating these bad guys, or of like even like the U-Men, right, in their suits, because they don't want to breathe like the contaminated air, you know. Like creating like this these villains that you would think in a lesser conceptual space someone would make them all look like Superman or something, right, as opposed to like let's put them in suits because they're like don't want to touch the contaminated world, right? And that's like such a different thing than what you would expect. You'd expect like this guy's got laser beam eyes and this guy is ripped because they saw like, but it's like not that, right? Like they went a totally different direction on like what these guys will look like, right? And so like the villains are so interesting looking and so unexpected.
Well, I think it's super interesting too of like the idea that, you know, if you look at some of the stuff that they are saying in today's world, like people would be like, yeah, they're right. That's these, you know, they're making a decision. This is how they want to live their lives. We have to accept them for who they are. You know what I mean? Like, and it's such an interesting thing that, you know, that is sort of harkens back to the sort of empathetic. I don't know if that's what Morrison meant at this time, but I don't think he was, I mean, I didn't feel like he was, you know, poking fun at it or, you know what I mean? Like he seemed to be playing it pretty straight in the sense of like, here's a legitimate argument that these people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it makes them a compelling sort of villain.
It makes them...
I don't even know. I mean, I guess they are the villains at that point, but it's interesting.
It gives them like a motivation you can understand for like harvesting mutants is like they want to be mutants, and like the tension of that, like
I guess that does make them bad guys.
Their motivation isn't the idea of someone being like, why should mutants be the only ones who get to, like, I forget the exact words, like rise above their genetics.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, the way he wrote it, it was like, oh, that's a compelling argument. Like, that's,
yeah,
it wasn't.
Like, the heart of it is like, oh, okay, like, that's interesting, because there would be people like that, right? There would be people who would be jealous, I guess, like, in a sense. Like, why would I, why can I not have X-ray vision or have wings?
Do you think,
like, what?
Do you think if Superman exists, Elon Musk wouldn't be trying to make himself into fucking Superman? You know what I mean? Oh, like,
yeah.
Elon constantly. Musk would be Lex Luthor in
two seconds.
Yeah.
In 2 seconds. I have to save humanity from Superman.
Yeah, where it's like the motivation behind what they do is very understandable and very, like, speaks to a truth of, like, actually there would be people who feel that way, right? Now you play it up to the villain level of, like, they're now going to go kill mutants to, like, steal their parts to, like, graft them onto them.
Get over the line, you know? But
that's the villain, villainy part of it. But it comes from a thing that, like, is true, right?
Right.
And, like, from a true feeling and a true emotion of, like, oh, I wish I was Wolverine. Why is Wolverine the only one? You know, like, the feeling that draws people to the characters, right? Like, I wish I was that. Like, why can't I be that? And playing it up to the extreme.
Yeah, that's an interesting commentary, you know, maybe on fandom and on society and on a lot of things. And not that many pages. And that's the thing that drives me fucking insane about Morrison. And maybe it's just my own stupidity. It's just like, he's so brilliant that when he dumbs things down to this level, it's still brilliant, just brilliant enough for me to understand, you know, like,
yeah, Morrison does such a great job of, like, finding interesting angles and, like, playing it up, but making it still a superhero story, you know, it's still fundamentally a superhero story, but with just, like, a thing you maybe haven't thought of before.
I don't know why, but I find that I'm able to both enjoy and understand Morrison's comics when he works with quietly.
Quietly is a master storyteller. I mean, quietly is one of the best storyteller artists in comics for sure.
I mean, one of the things that when you look at the issues before they started, one of the things that's just mind-blowing is the amount of fucking captions on the old stuff, right? Or of, like, how much storytelling. And it's nothing against, like, the artists who worked on it. That was, like, the style was still world.
Yeah,
that's, like, there's a lot of words
on the page. Before this, it was just the X-Men book, right? It wasn't new X-Men. So it was
X-Men.
But the numbering's the same.
So numbering is the same. 113.
This is the same series as, like, the Jim Lee X-Men, right?
Yep.
So that famous number one Jim Lee issue, this is one, 14.
But just, like, the style of it is just like, oh, my God. Like, wow. Like, in 1 month, it went from, that's why people freaked out. Because it was like, oh, my God, like, what is this? Like, this doesn't look like an X-Men. This doesn't look like X-Men. This looks like something else. Like, oh, my God.
I don't know if I can think of a book that just, like, mid-series had such a seismic shift in it like this. I mean, there's always going to be, you know, like the Batman Year One. But that was
nowadays it would have gotten a number one. They wouldn't have made it. New X-Men number 114, they would have just been like new X-Men number one, you know? So it's like,
that was a conscious choice by Quesada he wanted it to be a continuation, and because he didn't want to start it over.
Mm-hmm. I respect it. I always liked it, the idea of that, like, this is part of the whole thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is not some new weird, it is weird. I mean, it is new X-Men, but the idea of like having the numbering continue was always cool.
Yeah, I think that was a sign that it's like, you know, yeah, we're all in. This is Grant's story, and it's sorry, guys, this is continuity.
It's like, it's like, oh my God, what is happening?
This is continuity. This is not a, you know, an Elseworlds tale, I mean, or something like that.
It's funny because I recently, for fun, picked up the first copy of JLA, the first trade of JLA. Because, you know, it's very similar in some way. This, like, the situation, you know, like, the Justice League books have been, like, essentially old and dusty for years and years and years. And, like, still, you know, like, and essentially since the blah-ha-ha JLA hadn't really been that relevant, right? And, like, Morrison comes in, just sort of like resets everything, brings back this like the classic Justice League, you know, like introduces all this new stuff that you're kind of like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like, what's he doing? What's he, you know, I will say I like New X-Men better because I think it's actually there's way more personality to it, you know, to the characters than I do think in GLA, it falls a little into the Gardner Fox thing at times where
you can move the bubbles around.
Yeah. He's struggling a little bit to like really separate them out from each other within the context of the book. Now, of course, later on, I mean, Morrison writes one of the great Superman stories, like one of my favorite All-Star Supermans, like one of my favorite, and I would say like one of the quintessential modern Superman stories. So it's not like you can't write Superman. I just think in the context of the JLA, it was harder to sort of make those characters kind of feel that different. Like, whereas in New X-Men, he really like grasped onto these ways of like we were talking about, like Wolverine and Cyclops are relating differently to each other, and Beast is having like sort of this existential like crisis about who he is, right? The big laughing Beast, you know, of, you know, yesteryear is gone, and now it's like he is very much dealing with like, what am I? You know, like what separates me from the animals as I seem to be getting closer and closer to them. Right. And Jean Grey, you know, dealing with the idea of like, you know, her relationship with Scott is gone and like, or is falling apart. And that's been her character for
ever
30 years forever. At that point, yeah. Like that's what her character is, and like exploring that idea of like, okay, like if that goes away, like what am I, and like what is like my role in the X-Men. So it's great. I love it. It's such a great book.
It is that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, man.
Bravo.
It
was a great pick.
I'm gonna go back. I don't know if I ever read the entire run beginning to end, but yeah, I think I'm gonna go back. It just
for, there's so know, many things the in there. As I was reading it, and I have the omnibus. I took the cover off for the sake of this. So I was like flipping through it, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. There's Phantom X. And there's like all this stuff coming up, you know, where it's like, oh, it's not Weapon X, it's Weapon 10, you know, like all this stuff that, you know, all this really fun Morrison like twists on things, you know, from like, it's just awesome. I look forward to finishing it because I'm just like, oh, that's right. He did so much stuff.
Now, do you have
the time?
There's a like an omnibus, right? Or
yeah, I got the omnibus. Right there.
Do you enjoy the omnibus experience, or
it's not of a size that you can actually read? Like, it doesn't get quite to that level of some of the omnibus where they're like 1,000 page, like where they're double
the Amazing Spider-Man one.
Yeah, where it's kind of like, I can't like carry this around. Like,
oh God,
like
kill someone with this thing.
Yeah.
What is that one? Oh, Amazing Fantasy. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I never picked those. I have a whole shelf of those fucking books, and I never look them.
Oh God.
I don't even know why I have them.
I read them every once in a while.
And Julie Johnson said Alan Moore's Supreme was a complete 180. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you know, it's like Supreme's not one of the main big two books. You know, it's, you know, I agree probably, you know, that would qualify. But yeah, it's, you know, like it's not like Fantastic Four, you know, Spider-Man, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are things like it that have happened. Mm-hmm. You know,
but this one, it was an earthquake. Every comic book fan going into comic book shops was aware that Morrison and Quietly were doing X-Men. It was news.
I mean, such a drastic change storytelling, the way it looks, the way the characters look, the way the like story is told. Like I said, like if you look at issue 113 to 114, like it feels like more than a month has passed between those two issues. It's like, oh my God, because like, you know, what makes Quietly such a great artist, what makes Morrison such a great writer is like, Quietly's art is like, you can't quite pin it down. Like if that came out today, I'd be like, that is from today. Like it sort of escapes the whatever trappings of that time period are. Like he exists outside of that, which is cool, right? Like it's what makes his art so unique and why he's such a great choice to do like an All-Star Superman, where it's like this book is not trapped in the look of a certain time. It is its own thing. And like, this is Quietly.
So here's the synopsis for the issue 113, which was the Eve of Destruction conclusion. Following the death of Dazzler, Magneto faces each of Jean Grey's team of X-Men in turn. After attempting to put the iron from Polly's bloodstream, he sends him flying into the upper atmosphere, leaving Northstar to retrieve him and resuscitate him on an American battlecruiser 50 miles off Genosha. After this, Polly softens to Northstar, having thus far jibed at his sexuality. As Cyclops and Wolverine break into the palace, killing two guards on the way, Wolverine wonders whether Cyclops' experience with Apocalypse changed him, given his failure to berate Wolverine for the deaths. Meanwhile, Magneto constrains Frenzy with shards of metal, correctly guessing that she is under Jean Grey's psychic control. When Leu attempts to attack him, Magneto pulls together pieces of iron to encase himself and defuse the heat before encasing her in metal filings. He then grabs Hector, who for the first time demonstrates another side to his mutation beyond his appearance. He transfers this appearance to Magneto, who is disorientated to be delayed long enough for Cyclops to enter and knock him off his feet. He continues trying to hit Magneto with optic blasts and flex them until he is able to hit Cyclops with a piece of his now broken helmet. God.
Jesus Christ, dude. Yeah. It's like a description of one battle. It's so different. So such a different type of storytelling of like,
it was Scott Lobdell and Lennon Francis Yu was the artist.
Yeah. Young Lennon Francis Yu.
Yeah. Where it's like very different, like, oh my God. Like, and then the next month it's like, yeah. So, I mean, you just read that. And then the next month you go to pick up X-Men and like right off the bat, you're like, they're wearing like leather jackets. And there's wild sentinels and like, yeah, it's just crazy.
Pretty different for sure.
Pretty different. Very different.
Very different. The I love the on this website that I'm looking this at, marvel.fandom.com, there's a, you know, breaks down the issue, and it says featured characters, X-Men, Phoenix slash Green, Jean Grey Summers, North Star, Jean-Paul Barbier, leaves group, Frenzy, leaves group, Sumpire, leaves group, Omerta, leaves group, Wraith, leaves group, Cyclops, Wolverine, Dazzler, leaves group, Professor X, rejoins group. There's a lot going on in one issue.
I'm on issue. Like, clear the decks, baby. Clear the decks.
Grant Morrison's
going to make it weird. He's going to make it weird. Reset.
Big time. Yeah.
Oh, so if you have not read this, go get it and read it. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Hoopla, as always. I think we try and make every Trade Talks pick something that you can get through your...
And they have the whole run on Hoopla, the whole Morrison run. So if you are interested in reading it, I do recommend it. It is, it pays off, like, all the threads that start in the beginning. Mm-hmm. He pays them off in the end, and it's pretty rad. Now, I know in continuity, they kind of undone some of the things because he kind of went hog wild.
He went real crazy on the end.
Yeah, he went wild in the end. But like I said, like we've said before, I was like, I admire the audacity to be like, let's make this weird. Let's go for it. They can change it later. Like,
they can always go back.
You can always go back. And X-Men have many, many, many... Many times.
Many times. The nature.
Yeah. It was also, we didn't really get into this either, but it was interesting reading it and sort of like having the mind space of how much I enjoyed what Hickman did with the X-Men recently, where it was sort of a similar thing where he sort of reset like what the X-Men are and kind of did a very bold, like, this is what the X-Men are, and like really redefined it. And, you know, now you could say perhaps we're in the phase where that bold decision has spawned a lot of lesser iterations.
Right. Yeah, it's starting to grow.
Original story. But like, you know, having just recently read another one of these where somebody came in conceptually and sort of like kind of blew it up a little bit and like made it interesting, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of reset what you thought about the X-Men and their villains in a really interesting way.
Yeah, because it's kind of the same thing. X-Men was getting boring. It was uninteresting. And
yeah, I mean, I guess it's like, I always think about, like, I think the X-Men are just so, like, susceptible to that. Like, they're so susceptible to having, like, we're going to now, there's so many X-Men. And it's so easy to just have more mutants. Right. You could just, they just pop up. Right. Now we got more. Now we have less. Now we got more of them. Right. It's like, I don't know if there's some fundamental part of that makes it so easy to be like, now we have 8 X books suddenly, or we now have a dozen. And it's like, whoa, this is like too many X books. Like they just like pop up like weeds when you're not looking. There's all of a sudden like 4 new X books.
Go out and check your tomato bushes, and all of a sudden there's 14 X-Men weeds.
Yeah, if you're not careful, you're gonna get. You gotta check your walls for X books. I found a few. I found myself.
Here's your problem right here. You got too many X books.
This crawl space filled with this whole crawl space filled with Magneto miniseries. You got.
Oh, I found a nest of Wolverine.
Yeah. Well, you got here is a New Mutants relaunch that you weren't expecting.
As you guys are literally, as we're joking about this, I hear something.
Oh no! You got
crawling in my fucking ceiling. It sounded like
you got a
I think you got a Nightcrawler in there.
You got a Warlock. I'm not even resurrection. Kidding.
There's something crawling in my fucking ceiling.
You got yourself a Nightcrawler.
That's a Nightcrawler there.
I got a Nightcrawler. That was
really you got weird. One of those stories where Nightcrawler's a pirate up in there. That's
a... Uh-oh. It's a bunch of Bamfs.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
What would you call a bunch of Bamfs?
BIMF? BIMF? I don't know. BIMF.
You know, kind of like a murder of crows.
Your infestation or... and exit. If you don't check your long boxes, you'll just find like new miniseries popping up if you have enough X-books.
I have two questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
One, why does Hank have a baby doll at his workspace in the X-Mansion? Did you notice that? There's like this little cute baby doll.
I don't know.
Sitting there.
Maybe in, something in the that.
First issue, as it was the weirdest, like, why a baby doll? Why is there a baby doll
why
there?
Why is there a doll there?
Huh. It was odd.
There has to be an answer, right?
Quite lost a bet or something.
I don't know. It was odd for sure. And have you guys ever noticed, and I think Frank Quietly is certainly one of them, but a lot of times artists look like their drawings.
Yes.
Like Frank Quietly looks like a Frank Quietly,
yeah, Frank Quietly. Yeah.
Drawing, yeah. Which is an interesting thing. I mean, I guess it's not that weird of a thing. Like they use themselves for reference, but there are definitely artists that look like their drawings, you know? It's kind of weird, but yeah, that was it. That was my two questions. Did you guys enjoy the Van Skyver issue and the Lennel?
I remember when the annual came out, because I bought it and it's like, oh fuck, okay, it's sideways.
Yeah,
that was the sideways issue.
I hate the sideways issue. I just
the Zorn issue.
I mean, I love the story. I hate the gimmick of the sideways issue because I'm just like, if you're going to, we're going to get into a format. Now we're going to get into some real,
you know what? I kind of like it on a tablet, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, because like you are in control. You're in control of the tactile experience of it, but it's like when it's stapled and it's not, you know, the reason why you staple something in the middle and you have the two sides to hold is because it feels good in your hand, right? Like right, that's like the, and then when you flip it around, it like,
now it's, I don't clumsy. Know, to me,
it's clumsy. It's like hard to hold. It's like not like the same tactile experience, right? And it's like, if you're going to do that, you have to tell a story that uses that format in a way that is essential to it.
That warrants
which, like, it doing that. That warrants that, like, no. I'm, you know, it's not like it's a lot of work, but you're right. It's uncomfortable. You're not, it's not built to be held like that. We don't hold books that way. Like, it's weird. So it's like that. I love the story and it's nothing against the art in it too. It's just like, if you tell that type of, if you flip the format like that, I just feel like you gotta like, pay it off more, like make it more worth my time. Because every time I read that issue, ever since it's come out, I'm always like, I like this story. I wish I could just read it in a more comfortable way. Like, that's not like there's no reason for it to be like this other than like, this was the gimmick for these annuals, I guess.
Yeah. Was it all of the Marvel annuals that year did that?
Well, there also is an issue coming up that's the All Silent issue, which is rad because like,
oh, 9/11
quietly like kills it in like the Silent issue because like he doesn't need any words to like tell a rad story. Right. Like, and it's like, oh man, he just murders it in there. Like, it's like, this is awesome. Like, I totally understand what's happening in the story.
That's another weird thing to kind of think of. This series started, this is pre 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read it in a while.
This is September of 2001.
Think about what happens later in this story that it's wild to think about, like, when Magneto like destroys New York.
Yes.
You know, like Like, it's wild to think about that. I mean,
like, right before or right after? Was it right?
Like a year or two after? Maybe longer. A couple of years. But still, right? Like, it would be weird now. Maybe not. But you know what I mean. Like, it's like, you know, fiction. Obviously, it's fictional. I don't, you know, who cares? It's just, like, fun. It's weird to think about. It's weird to think about my life before the collapse of society. it was different.
Better.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's weird to think about. I'm old enough to remember before.
Is this why you have such hatred for old people?
Oh, God. I hate old people. It's just like arguing about hippies and hard hats. It's just like, oh, my God.
They created the country, Tom.
I know, right? It's just like whenever I see a thing, whenever there's like an argument where someone's like, hippies ended the war in Vietnam. It's like, the war in Vietnam ended when North Vietnam won in 1975. I don't know if you know that. We like bombed Cambodia after the war. This is an entirely separate discussion, but.
I'm just poking the bear.
I know that conversation on Twitter was made my mind just like melt, where I was just like, oh no.
I mean, like, they did have something to do. I mean, they put something, pressure, but it was,
but it's honestly, just like,
it was probably more detrimental to Nixon's war, you know, stopping the war, like, and pulling people out of the war than it was helpful. You know what I mean?
Like, he
sort of reinforced his hatred of liberals.
I just hate, like, this, I responded to somebody else who responded that, where I was like, it's like the heavy Time Life book energy to that discussion of, like, all history, that history, by the way, that you lived through, you are now recounting, like, the simplified version. If anyone should be cognizant of perhaps more nuance to history, it would be like you, the people that lived through it. But instead, you are like, if anything, like buying into the oversimplification of your own experience that you lived through, which is what makes me crazy. But anyway,
rose-colored glasses, my friend.
Rose-colored glasses, exactly. Yeah.
This so I wanted to tell you this. I before we were doing the show today, I just happened to look up some quietly stuff.
That's so brilliant.
This right here, this Superman by him, and just showing the drawings of, you know, slumping Clark Kent and this upright, you know, Superman character, and how he was able to define the same body and just make it look like two different human beings.
Yeah, it's rad.
It really is fucking awesome. Like,
I'm just going to pick All-Star Superman for my next pick when we get back around it.
I might pick that. Well,
yeah, pick it. Let's just go with the good vibes.
It is Sal's pick.
Fuck it. I'll do All-Star Superman. Yeah. I was almost going to pick the next volume of this because I enjoyed it so much.
All right. All-Star Superman.
But I'll do All-Star Superman. Yeah, fuck yeah.
What say the commenters? In the stream,
the commenters,
see if they're down with that active comment thread tonight.
Yeah, pretty
we should just
they like the trade talks. I think we should just do trade talks every week. We'll just read one book every week and fuck reading new comics. Let's just read old.
That's not a bad idea. I just
read old comics.
Yeah, which Tom, are you ready? To start doing Chris and Tom talk about old comics.
Oh yes, I'm ready. All-Star Superman is available
on Hoopla. Yeah. So so I think that we should trade. I think we should go back and forth. Just one issue. It's one issue of an old comic, which we'll say pre-2000, right?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So do we want to do Sektars number one? Is that our first?
Sektars number one.
All right. So you know where to read it, and we'll
Sektars. We got it. Yep. I'm gonna read the whole run. It's gonna be like All-Star Superman, where it's like you can't read just like one issue.
Yes, you can.
New
X-Men.
You can
read exactly
one issue of Sektars.
This would be fine.
Guys, I'm so excited to read All-Star Superman because All-Star Superman is such a rad series that every time I read it, I'm always like, God, that's so good. It makes me feel, it's like, just make someone make Morrison and Quietly just do more stuff.
Yeah, it's like Brubaker and Phillips, you know, Quietly just and Morrison. It is one of my absolute favorite absolute editions too. It reads so well as an absolute. The just gorgeous oversized love art.
Love it.
So I was trying to come up with a, you know, it's Chris and Tom and comics. But I was trying to come up with something so that you could name your show CTE, because I think that's
yeah, brand it. Yeah, definitely some severe brain injuries.
So I don't know. I got to figure out what
over sectars as we argue over sectars number one.
It's Chris Tom Energy. I don't know. It's Chris Tom something. I don't.
Let's get Morrison and Quietly to bring back sectars.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
That'd be rad. Be rad. Yeah.
Hey man, it's Bill Mantlo. Bill Mantlo and Mark Teixeira.
Is it Teixeira or Teixeira?
Teixeira is the baseball player. Teixeira is the artist.
Yeah, did we ask him that?
Yeah.
I think we
asked him at a
from the horse's mouth, right?
Yeah.
Which figures we would ask someone that.
Yeah. Well, how do you say your name?
Yeah, I'm sure after the baseball player, he got sick of it.
I would not be opposed to turning Around Comics into a bi-weekly trade talk. So I don't fun. Have. It is fun. It is fun talking about one book. I like talking about one book.
Yeah,
as opposed and to
especially
trying,
if it's good.
Can we read a book a week? Can we read one trade a week? Is that possible?
I can read a trade. Just don't be picking before the dark whatever it was.
No, it'd have to be a small
12 issues of 1970s Legion.
No.
So do we All-Star Superman next week? You gotta
wait. I do it. Yeah.
I can talk about All-Star Superman right now.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Okay. I think we all could.
Yeah.
Well, we'll discuss that. I don't know. That might be a, as opposed to, you know, I know we've been talking about like weekly comics for years, but
yeah,
you know,
this week sucked.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
There was the detective, the Raphael, the new detective with Raphael Albuquerque.
Oh, I'll check that out. Yeah. But yeah,
but other than that, it was a rather dire week.
There's almost always like two or three books where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm enjoying reading that. This week it was nothing. I tried a couple things and they were just, I'm not even going to talk about them. It was a bad week. Yeah.
Yes, Greg Porter, we know it's Quietly.
Quietly.
Quietly. I always say Quietly, but I'm aware. It's like Quite Frankly. It's
Quite Frank Quietly. Yeah. Frank Quietly.
It's not his real fucking name. So if I mispronounce it, you know.
I could talk about All-Star Superman in 2 weeks. I would have no problem. I'm going to read it this weekend. It's not an excuse to read it.
Maybe it's time for a format change.
No.
We've been doing this for a long time.
Morrison and Quietly signed, man.
Oh. Well,
ooh.
That just depreciated the value of that book.
I know. It's no longer mint condition.
There's very few comics people that I would ever be that interested in actually talking to that I haven't talked to, aside from Grant Morrison would be probably the exception to that, like talking to somebody.
I'm sure a drunk ass Chris talking to Grant Morrison was probably a sight to behold.
That didn't happen. I was pretty good shape whenever I talked to Quietly. That was at Morrison Con. And Quietly was there and Morrison, obviously. Yeah.
Are you Backstabber Con?
Huh? Oh, shut up.
Benedict Arnold Con? Is that what the one you're talking about? Oh yeah, yeah, I remember.
Trader Con.
Trader Con?
Trader Con.
Good job. Good job with that. Glad you got a book signed out of that.
Treason. Treason.
Hope you're
con.
Happy. Treason Con.
Damn. Yeah, sorry, Ron. Jeez.
I'm just joking.
All right. So I think we all agree that we can read All-Star Superman. We're gonna do all 12 issues.
Hell yeah, why not? Fuck it.
All right. So that I don't it's
you have to at least get to issue 9. Right, like that's the best.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah. I think we need to read the whole like thing. I think that they broke it into 2 trades. It's volume 1 and 2. So
the Hoopla collections 1 through 12.
Okay, we'll be okay. Yeah. We're reading all 12 issues. All right, cool. Yep. We're gonna do ACTV this week, right? And we might have a guest appearance by one Mr. Tom Caters.
I'll show up. What times are you gonna be at? 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
We can do 8. All right. Yeah, we can do 8.
All right. It works for me.
Have you guys seen The Gray Man on Netflix?
Not yet. I keep wanting to watch it, but I've not found time.
Yeah, it's like a perfect action movie. It's exactly what you want if you're looking for just an awesome.
Have you guys watched The Bear?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that. Creaming over that show with the last couple of weeks.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we can talk about more though for sure because it's an excellent show.
Yeah, there's Chris, actually some.
Have you watched The Old Man yet?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
All right,
it's so good.
I may start that tonight.
It's like an elevated spy story.
Okay.
It's really good.
Chris, did you finish Doom Patrol?
I finished the second season. I'm 2 episodes into season 3. So all
right, I'm going to go back. I'm going to try and finish season 3 of Doom Patrol.
Okay.
By Sunday.
Ooh, okay. 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 I've got a lot of stuff to watch then.
I don't know if I'm making a brisket this weekend, so I don't know if I'm going to have time, but you know
what, well, you have 12 hours while the fucking thing cooks for you to watch. That's
there's a lot of episodes in season 2 of Doom Patrol that made me teary-eyed.
They figured
it out. I was like, oh my god, this is like designed. There's certain fictional works that I think are designed to make like dads cry.
Well, you also, I think there's also something genetic or like hormonal that happens when you become a father, because I mean, before I was a father, I don't know that there was probably 3 times in my life that I cried.
Oh, now it's like,
now it's, yeah. I mean, after becoming a father, it's just like, I bawl at everything. It's so,
yeah.
I don't know if it's just getting older. You're, you know, like estrogen levels, you know, get higher, but I think there's something that happens hormonally when you become a dad. Forget it. If there's anything that's involving a, you know, a daughter, because I have a daughter too, and it's like,
How many times did you put her in a bucket and put her down a well? I mean, is that a thing?
I mean, metaphorically, you know, you ask her, I'm sure there's, you know, many a time, but
it's like the bucket. There's all these moments where it's like, my wife, she's like, what are you? She finds Doom Patrol creepy.
Yeah.
Like it freaks her out. It is creepy.
It is
and
creepy.
And she's like, why are you like crying? And it's like, it's about fathers.
My family like, makes fun of me now because I'm the biggest crier in the fucking family. Like,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I don't even watch Disney movies anymore because it's just like, forget
it. Oh, yeah. What was I watching the other? My kids are really into, they've discovered like live action Disney, like TV shows.
Jungle Book? Oh.
No, not like Jungle Book's too intense. They love the cartoon. They don't like the live action one. It's like a little, like the live action ones, I find are a little scary. Like they're like a little more intense, mm-hmm. right? Like the cartoons, Yeah, the cartoons, it's like even the scariest things aren't that scary, you know, like it's a cartoon. So
I think with those, there's also like a bit of like the uncanny valley effect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know that those creatures aren't real, but they look so fucking real.
Yeah.
That it's weird. I remember when I first put that movie on at home on my TV, my dog could not stop staring at Bagheera. Anytime Bagheera was on it, Zeus would just fucking watch it.
That's awesome.
It was weird. I mean, it was odd. Like he would just watch the thing pace back and forth across the screen. You know, which is there's something
we saw the Aladdin musical in New York on Broadway, which was rad, and the kids loved it. So they wanted to see the movie, and so we watched the animated version. Then we tried to watch the live action version, and they just were not
good for that.
Having
you raised them well, Tom.
Yeah, raised them like, well. They're like, what is happening? It's like, the cave is too scary. It's like, yeah, I agree with you. The balance of this movie is off. Where like, it's like, you've made it perhaps too intense. Like, ease up a touch.
Have some fun. Have a little fun with things, Disney.
Yeah, where they're into like the live action, like, all the musical stuff, like the High School Musical. And like Zombies, which is like this trilogy of like these musical they're goofy. Like, they're so cheaply made. Like that's when I was joking about, like, it doesn't surprise me that the CGI in Disney movies don't always look finished, because I've seen so many Disney productions now where I'm like, this thing could not be made any cheaper.
Right.
Like, where it's like, we have a school gym in a field, and every scene is going to happen in these two places. Like, I mean, bravo to the scrappy production teams who've done that. But I'm like, watching these movies, and there's like a slightly touching scene, and I'm like starting to feel myself get teary eyed. And I'm like, this movie is stupid. This is
terrible. Like, why am I?
It's a terrible movie. And I'm being emotionally affected by this scene between like these werewolves and zombies, like learning to get along with each other. That's not meant to be emotional. It's not. It's like, at that, it's like,
are you going through menopause, Tom?
I'm just like, you know, like
this everything sound, you falling sound menopausal.
The world falling apart has left me in like a very vulnerable state. Emotional state. Yeah.
Absolutely vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's gonna be okay, Tom. The world's gonna be fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay. We're gonna be fine. Yeah. We'll figure
all right. So we've got All Star Superman.
Oh wait, I had well, I mean, we can close. I wanted two things I wanted to bring up as long as we're talking about this stuff.
Let's do it.
One was because we're talking TV, a shout out to the production and design set design crews of What We Do in the Shadows. Like, I love that show so much, but goddamn, you know, and I said it on Twitter, it's like, it's easy to praise the writing and the acting on that show, but bravo to the fucking set artists. Like, some of those sets are so great and just amazingly, you know, spooky and cheesy and campy and awesome. And, you know, they just keep adding shit to the
they're doing something special this season. It is.
Yeah.
It's this might be the jump the shark season, because I think they're going all in on whatever you want to call it.
All I know is Matt Berry is an American treasure. I know he's British, but I'm claiming him. And I know it doesn't really mean much to be an American treasure these days, but I'm fucking claiming Matt Berry as an American treasure. That guy,
he's great.
This is so good for him. I mean, this show, he's so perfect. He's so fucking perfect. And I laugh out loud at the silliest little lines that he throws out, and just some of the facial expressions he makes, you know, just end of story. Some of the shit he does.
Oh, I think every one of the characters could be the main character in the show. That's just how strong it is. And they're all, any of them could be the centerpiece of the show, but you know they're allowed to, you know, to all have their own moments. I it's brilliant. I'm the number not watching this week's episode.
Oh, it's good. It's so good. Number two, did either of you see somebody posted a clip online of it was Steven Spielberg at the Actors Studio being interviewed by what's his name? I can't think of the guy's name that he died, but he was always the guy that
inside the Actors Studio.
Inside the Actors Studio.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name.
James Lipton.
Yes, James Lipton.
Yeah.
Thank you. He's interviewing
Spielberg. Beard.
Yeah. He's interviewing Spielberg and he asks him a question, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it was basically like, your mother was a musician, your father was a computer scientist. If they were in Close Encounters, how would they communicate? And Spielberg all of a sudden has this moment of realization that he wrote Close Encounters and that the scientists were his father and the aliens were his mother. Huh. And he didn't realize that until James Lipton asked him that question. And he's like, thank you. Thank you. That's an excellent question. I did not know that until you just asked me that. I never realized that that's what I did, but you're right. And he has this like epiphany on this fucking stage. Cool. It was poetic. It was like this beautiful thing of a writer sort of, and someone seeing that in his work and like going, yeah, that's right. That's what it was. I didn't know it when I wrote it, but that's what it was. It was my mother and father communicating in that movie. That was, and it's like, holy fuck. That was amazing. Like talk about a, you know, give James Lipton some credit. I know he has a bit of a cartoonish personality, is the way he speaks and the way he looks. But yeah. Fucking A, that dude
loved
movies and just was as good an interviewer, I think, as anybody, even though some people sort of like shit on him for some of the questions he asked. But that guy loved movies and movie making and acting and all those things. So, but I just thought that was really a fucking cool like thing to see Spielberg sort of like have that moment of realization of his own work. From years ago, you know what I mean? Like that's pretty cool.
Nice. Well, speaking of TV stuff, mentioned Tom will be dropping by ACTV. That usually comes out on Mondays. We may talk. I'm done with The Boys. I have one last episode, so I'll have The Boys. You can listen to all that by being a patron. You can find out about that at patreon.com/aroundcomics. You can email the show at info@aroundcomics.com. We're here every Thursday, 8 o'clock Central Standard Time ish. You can be part of the comment thread and all that. So I want to thank Greg and Neil and Julie and a few others there for hanging out tonight.
Neil and Julie are one person. Neil and Julie Johnson. That's one person.
Yep.
I don't know
if it was Neil or Julie.
I don't know. Yeah. Is it Neil or is it Julie or is it one? Is that Johnson. One person, Neil and Julie?
I have no idea.
We.
You guys have anything else?
No.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. K Billy Super Sounds. 2 weeks. We'll do.
2 weeks?
Wait. Well, we're doing ACTV this Sunday with Tom.
Oh, right. Shit. We're going to have to let Tom or let Will know.
Will know.
I think this was supposed to be the weekend we were going to do.
Oh, well, I don't want to. I can.
Tom, do you want to join us for K Billy Super Sounds? Can you watch The Hateful Eight between now and Sunday and talk about it?
Yeah, I can try.
Okay, we'll do. Okay, K Billy Super Sounds it is.
Yeah. We've never had Tom K Billy.
Yeah, it'll be fun. You'll have to do a four-person grid.
I am Greg Porter. I am going to cry thinking about James Lipton and Steven Spielberg. I may tear up.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you. That just won the night. All right, so Tom will join us for K-Billy Super Sounds. It means I'm going to have to rewatch Hateful Eight here in the next couple days.
Whoa, really? Oh, that's why you were putting it off. You hadn't watched it?
Interesting. That's fine. I've seen it before.
Should we do a live view? Should we do a live view before Sunday? When are you guys going to watch it? Saturday night? Saturday afternoon? Sunday morning?
Probably Sunday morning.
Should we do a live view of it?
You want to work out the kinks before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Well, yeah, I'd like to. We could try a live.
I'd be fine with that. I'd give it a shot.
All right, we'll work on the details off camera. Okay. But all right. Yeah, maybe we could do a live view Sunday. Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah,
live watch party. You'd have to be a Patreon member to get the live watch view, but that could be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
We could do it right in here. I could literally play it. We could watch it on this, you know, I could play it in here and we could watch it together and comment as we're watching.
We can do that.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
An experiment.
It would be.
Something all right. Look for details coming soon. All right.
We could do that for superhero movies in the future. Right. Ooh. Like go back to our classic, you know, watch some truly fantastic superhero movies.
Yeah.
I want to watch the 1990s Flash movie with you or the Flash TV series.
Oh, the Flash TV series.
Don't go back and watch it. Yeah.
Oh, I loved it so much back then, but yeah.
Don't rewatch it.
I do love that they brought that guy back to be Barry.
Yeah. Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah.
It's a great callback.
And with Jay Garrick. All right. So all that and more to look forward to. We'll be back next Thursday for the regular show. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
Hand around comics
with doughy looking people.
Hey, who are you talking to? I'm not that doughy.
I was talking about Superman.
I'm pretty doughy. Thick. I wish I was that doughy.
Right?
Superman's thick. Come on.